Okay, we're good morning. We're learning today Perek Dalid of the Gvuras Hashem. And last week we learned about the significance of Yetzias Mitzrayim per se, separate from the tricks, so to speak, the miracles of the specifics, frogs here, frogs there, kinim orev, splitting of the sea, and so on and so forth. Besides for the specific, again, I don't mean to use the term at all, chas v'chalila, derisively, but besides for the so-called specific tricks of Yetzias Mitzrayim, but the miracle, as the Maral pointed out, because the verse always speaks about, wow, Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim, there was the miracle of the Exodus in and of itself. That Hashem took us out of Mitzrayim. And he went through to explain it using the Chazal that used two metaphors for Yetzias Mitzrayim. One metaphor was the Kur HaBarzel, the Zahavi, the goldsmith, who takes the gold out of the smelting furnace, and the other one being the Goy Mikerev Goy, the shepherd that takes the fetus out of its mother's womb. And he explained that it's really two madrigas, two aspects. There's the one aspect of the weakness of the Jewish people, the incompleteness of the Jewish people, the chumrius, the physicality of the Jewish people that was just not developed like the fetus that's not ready to come out yet. And the second was the overpowering presence of the Egyptians, that their tzura, that their vision and their structure would compete with the Jewish people's tzura and structure. And so it was both the lack of completeness of the Jewish people per se, as well as the strength of the Egyptians. And therefore the miracle of Yetzias Mitzrayim was both in the generating of a shlemus, of a completeness of the Jewish people, and of the tzura of the Jewish people being able to triumph over that of the Egyptians. What the Maral is going to do in this perek, in Perek Dalid, is he's going to be discussing a specific comment of Chazal, very interesting comment of Chazal. Rashi partially quotes this comment of Chazal in his commentary on the Chumash in Parshas Achrei Mos, and it's something which helps us a little bit to understand the character of the contrast between Mitzrayim and Yisrael, and also shortly between Mitzrayim and Canaan. The pasuk says in Parshas Acharema, "Istaber al bnei Yisrael v'yamarta aleihem ani Hashem Elokeichem." This, by the way, is the laning of Mincha on Yom Kippur. He says, "Tell the Jewish people, speak to the Jewish people, and say to them, 'I am Hashem your God.' Kemaseh Eretz Mitzrayim asher yishavtem bo lo yisa'asu." Like the actions of Eretz Mitzrayim that you have dwelled in, you shall not do. And like the actions of Eretz Canaan that I'm bringing you to, you shall not do. Uvechukosehem lo selechu, and don't follow in their laws. So Rashi says, Magid shemaseim shel Mitzrayim v'shel Knanim mikukolim mikol ha'umais. This teaches you that the Egyptians and the Knanim were the paragons of non-virtue. They were the worst. And therefore, when Hashem is looking to instruct the Bnei Yisrael as to what to do or what not to do, he says, just stay away from the way the Egyptians do things and from the way the Canaanim do things. Right? One, of course, didn't have to read the pasuk this way. One could have said, we were in Mitzrayim. So Hashem says, don't do like the Egyptians. We were going to Canaan. Hashem's saying, don't do like the Canaanim. But the way Chazal read it, it wasn't just an incidental, this is what's familiar, don't do it. But here in the book, which is setting down Chukei Chayim, you know, the rules for life, it's saying that is the worst of it all. You can leave it open, please. Leave it open. You know, there's actually a little wedge if you want. You can put it in the door because it keeps closing. That they're the worst of it. And Rashi goes on and continues, and it's again a quote of the Teras Kayanim, V'aisei mokam sheyashu b'Yisrael mekulko min hakoel. And the place where the Jewish people lived was the worst of the worst. In other words, Mitzrayim was bad, Canaan was bad. They were worse than other nations. But you should know the places where the Jews were the worst of the worst. What does that mean? What does that mean? Now, you can't blame it on the Jews. Because if you blame it on the Jews, it doesn't make sense to say that about the Canaanim. Because they hadn't been there yet. Right? In other words, it's the Egyptians that they were there, you could say maybe you could blame it on the Jews. The Jews made the Egyptians so bad. But it's saying also the Canaanim to whom I'm bringing you, you also shouldn't be like them. And the Canaanim, they weren't going to stay amongst them to be influenced by the Jews. The Jews had a mitzvah, like we read in the Parsha this week, of destroying them, of getting rid of them, of getting the Canaanim out. But there's something about the places that where the Jews were to go that would stand as the greatest contrast, as the worst of the worst. And this is something that the Maharal sets about to explain. To explain in this parak. What is the idea that the Bnei Yisrael find themselves, whether in Mitzrayim previously or in Canaan, where they're going to the place of the worst possible depravity on the part of the host nations? How is that? And again, Maharal quotes the Tayas Kanim beyond Rashi, just instructive to listen to it. How do you know there was no nation amongst the nations that actions were like the Egyptians? And that's not a compliment. Again, worst of the worst. And how do you know that the last generation, in other words, the ones right here that the Jewish people lived with, how do you know they were the worst? Because we say, that you dwelled amongst Leisasu. How do you know that it was because the Jewish people were there? That you lived there. How do you know the same thing for the Canaanim? So the Medrash goes through the same thing. So what's the idea? So says the Maharal. Maharal will approach this, the first aspect, the first stage of this Maharal, where he's just going to speak about this contrast with Mitzrayim. He's going to approach it in two stages, as he often does. And he says as follows: HaKadosh Baruch Hu made a gzera for the Jewish people. Ki ger yiyaz aracha be'eretz lelohem v'avodim v'inu aysam arba me'ashana. Your children should be strangers in a foreign land, and they should be enslaved, and they should be afflicted there for 400 years. Says the Maharal, the Bnei Yisrael were supposed to go through something. They were supposed to endure something. They weren't supposed to be comfortable. They were supposed to be strangers. They weren't supposed to be on their own. They were supposed to be enslaved. And so it's appropriate for this that they actually have a clash with its exact opposite, with the thing which opposes it the most. That would be the greatest conflict between the two. You know, just as a dimyon, as a comparison in halacha, there's a concept of davar sheyesh lematirin. Right? When you speak about a notion of bittul, when you have one substance and another substance and they mix together and one outnumbers the other, so then the one is able to be mevatel, to negate the presence of the other. But in a certain sense we say that that only works when there's a real contrast between the two. But when there isn't a sharp contrast between the two, then one doesn't have an effect on the other. So, for example, something which is forbidden, but there's a way to make it permitted, it doesn't stand in such great contrast to the other thing. Min b'minai le'batil, right? When you have two things of the same type, one is not going to be mevatil the other. In order to create, in a sense, the tension, the bittul, the contrast has to be sharp. The gzeira, the decree of Bris Bein Absarim, was that the Jewish people should be strangers, that the Jewish people should be enslaved and afflicted. That is not going to happen in common ground. That's not going to happen in a place where they would feel a sense of comfort or kinship with the people who they were with. So where did Hashem send us? Hashem sent us to Mitzrayim. And Mitzrayim stands as polar opposites to the Bnei Yisrael. Kimasei Eretz Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim will stand as the poster child of vice just as the Jewish people are supposed to be the poster child of virtue. Think back. HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the first time he sent us into Golus and Mitzrayim, right, was in the days of Avram Avinu. What's the contrast? Avram Avinu comes down to Mitzrayim. What's his worry on the threshold of Mitzrayim? His worry on the threshold that they're going to take his wife. Why? Because the Egyptians are Shtufei Zima. There's no God fearing. He said actually by Plishtim. But you could imagine. Maybe that language would be possible here. Maybe not. But he said they're going to take Sarah because they're Shtufei Zima. And look at the incredible contrast. Remember the Rashi? I mean, the Rashi is so hard to understand. We're not going to explain it fully right now. It's not for now. But Rashi says Avraham Avinu's there. They're about to come in Mitzrayim. He says, "Hine no yodati ki isho yufas mare'ot." Oh, you know, I realize that you're a beautiful woman. So what's the pshat? So there's a simple pshat in the pasuk, which is, you know, as Rashi says, now's the time I got to worry about it, because here we're coming into a situation where they won't know how to restrain themselves from a beautiful woman like you. But the first thing which Rashi says is, "Hine no yodati," is this is now the first time that Avraham Avinu took a real look at Sarah Imenu. Until then, lahikirba mitach tzniyus shebeinehem, he didn't notice, he didn't see, because of the tzniyus, because of the modesty which was practiced between them. Now, on the threshold of Mitzrayim, he had to get a sense, because of where they were headed. Can you have a starker contrast than Mitzrayim, where it's considered to be so awash in Zima, in immorality, that Avraham Avinu knows, if I'm going to go there and this is my wife, they're just not going to leave her alone. And he, who himself, with his wife, to whom he's married, to whom he's permitted, is still guarded. The contrast is extremely sharp. Yeah?
At the same time, Canaan was also like that, though. So much, according to what you're saying, that we count the 400 starting while Yitzchak is still in Canaan. But the pasuk says Canaan and Mitzrayim were both.
Right. So both Canaan and Mitzrayim are considered these polar opposites. However, as the Maharal is going to explain later in this parak, there's a difference between how Mitzrayim is and how Canaan is. That's really the second goal of the parak. To explain to speak about the difference between Mitzrayim and Canaan. So yes, they both stand in strong contrast to the Israel in this regard.
So is Mara explaining it at this point of why we were there? Is it just because of the pasuk we had to be in this situation?
That's the idea in a sense of the Kur HaBarzel of the notion of being developed somehow. It's through the tension, through the conflict of the opposites.
But we fell to them, and they influenced us.
Well, we fell to them in certain ways, but we didn't fall to them in other ways. And in the most fundamental way, that is what we're talking about here, we are not considered to having fallen to them. So let's again. So here's we'll come to it, Amir Tashem, in a minute.
Right?
The Memta Shari Tuma, but not immorality. Not immorality. Chazal tell us very strongly that Kol Yisrael in this realm did not fall in the same way. So there's like that contrast to begin with. And let's take it one more step, which is what happened. So they came out of Mitzrayim, and there was a man named Lot, right, who went with Avraham Avinu. And Lot went with Avraham Avinu with the same virtue of Avraham Avinu. And Lot came out of, in other words, as a Tosfos, I shouldn't say the same virtue as Avraham Avinu, but he came as a Talmud of Avraham Avinu, who was interested in the ways of Avraham Avinu. He was Hailech Es Avraham. He was going as a adjunct to Avraham. And then when he came out, there started to arise tensions between them. And what does Lot do? As Avram says, you know, we need to go our own separate ways. And Lot looks up, and he sees Kikar Yarden, Kikula Mashke, Lifnei Shacheis Hashem Estoim Es Amora. He looks out, and he sees Sodom and Amora. And he says, I want to live there. And Chazal say, the Gemara says, takes that pasuk, and it parses it phrase by phrase. And it says, Lot wanted to be there. Why? Because they were into immorality, into sexual immorality. That was why Lot chose to be there. Because every phrase in that verse which described Lot looking out at Sodom and saying, I want to be there, every phrase is found in another context where it's used for immorality. That's what the Gemara does. Very unusual Gemara. Right? But that's what he was. He was a shatuf bezima. He had become, I should say rather, a shatuf bezima. He was influenced by the immorality of Mitzrayim. And so he said, we're out of Mitzrayim now, but where should we live? Well, there's another place here, which are shtufei zima. Lefishayu shtufei zima bachar loy loit bishchunosam. That's what Rashi says. Because Sodom or shtufei zima, so Lot chose to live there. This is it. Lot didn't survive the contrast. What's Lot, by the way? What's Lot the father of? Ammon and Moab. Ammon and Moab were the two nations that were conceived in immorality. The Gemara says, again, this is probably one of the most misquoted Divrei Chazal, right? But you know, when Hashem was giving the Torah to the Jewish people, so he went to the nations first. Right? So famously, he went to Esav. He said, you want the Torah? They said, what does it say? Nishma v'nasa. Let's hear first. And what did Hashem say? It says, don't kill. Esav said, you're going to put me out of business. I'm not interested. He went to Yishmael. So Yishmael said, what is it written in there? What did Hashem say to Yishmael? So he said, don't steal. Very good. Accurate quote. Don't steal. Usually people say, don't commit adultery. Okay, but you got it. So he says, don't steal. Yishmael said, Yadav Bakov, Yad Kolboy, that's my business. Right? Forget it. I can't take it. He went to Ammon and Moab, and he said, what about you? He went to all, these are all the ones, the nations that are closest relatives to the Jewish people. And they said, it says, don't commit adultery. And they said, forget it. That denies our beginnings. Right? Our beginnings were in immorality. Right? Sodom became the home for Lot, who was taken over in a certain sense by this Zima, by this immorality of Mitzrayim. That's how he became a part of it. And then the Gemara, then what happens is, when the Malachim come in Parshas Vayera, in the beginning of Parshas Vayera, the Malachim come to Avram Avinu, and they promise him a child, and then they go on to Sodom. It's such a beautiful thing. You look at the contrast. Again, just like we have, Bakasha, just like we had over there in Mitzrayim, where Avraham Avinu comes down to Mitzrayim, and you see the contrast between how he conducts himself with his own wife, Sarah, and how everybody there is conducting themselves with just the beautiful woman who comes in. When the Malachim come to Avraham Avinu, not only do they have a chance to see his chesed, but remember, what do they say to him? They say, where's your wife, Sarah? And Avraham Avinu says, she's inside. Says Rashi, what's the purpose of this exchange? Because it's coming to highlight the tzniut, the modesty of Sarah. Right? These malachim didn't bring their wives. They didn't bring their wives. Sarah had nobody to entertain. So she stayed in the kitchen and she prepared the food. She didn't come out to sit with the guests. Hine ba'el. And that goes, then these same malachim go on to Sodom, where number one, instead of being greeted with kindness, they're greeted by a lynch mob. And instead of being greeted with modesty, they're greeted by sodomy, by the immorality of Sodom. That's part and parcel of the tremendous, tremendous contrast which is there. So Avram Avinu is the beginning of this. And so HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, the contrast which is going to be the Kur HaBarzel, this place of the, of what do you call it, the crucible in which Klal Yisrael is going to be born, the contrast is going to be in Mitzrayim, that's so much the opposite of the Jewish people. And what's the idea? So as the Maral brings, Shiftei Ka Eidus LiYisrael. Remember, what do Chazal say when Klal Yisrael came out of Mitzrayim and they're in the Midbar? So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had them counted, and he had them counted according to their families. And it was really, it was something which was challenged, right? Parshas Pinchas, the beginning of Parshas Pinchas, there's a challenge to the morality of the Jewish people there at that point in time. And they said, you know, I don't know, you're counting the Jewish people, you're claiming that they're part of their families. Come on. They were in Egypt for all those years. the Egyptians controlled them, they took advantage of them. You think there wasn't hanky-panky that was going on over there? Says the Gemara, Shifte Ka. It says, Haruveni, Hashimaini, Hakahasi, where all always puts the name of Hashem surrounding the Shvatim, surrounding the families, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu testified, these are the fathers. These are the fathers. Klal Yisrael was in Mitzrayim for all those years, and that morality went uncompromised. There was one case that was different. And the Torah says who that case is that is different. And that was, there was a woman named Shlomis Bas Divri, right? And she had a son, and he was Ben Ish Mitzri. He was the son of an Egyptian. She was not following the normal conduct that was normal for the Menais Yisrael. She was Shlomis. She would say hello to everybody. She was Bas Divri. She was overly chatty, right, with people, with men. And it ended up that she was the one exception. And as Ramban says in Bereshis, when Sarah was taken to the house of Pharaoh and Hashem did miracles to protect her that she wouldn't be touched, that was the Masav HaSimon Labanim. That was the model for the future, for the fact that when the Jewish people would be in Mitzrayim, their women would go untouched and unaffected by the Egyptians. Chazal say, Ganol, Achaisi Kala, Ganol, right, like a closed, a locked garden, right, that refers to the Besulais, it refers to the Beulais, whether the young women who had never been married before, whether the women who had been. Mayan Chosum, a sealed spring, is the males of the Jewish people. They didn't do with the Egyptian women. It was a study in contrasts, a tremendous study in contrasts that did this. And the Egyptians tried. One thing, which Maral doesn't discuss here, Mi'et Hashem, we will talk about it later in the Gvures, but one thing that the Mitzrim did succeed in doing was that they took away from us the Bris Mila. The Bris Mila is the sign of how the Jewish people sanctify that relationship. Sanctify sexuality as opposed to the depravity of the Mitzrim and the Canaanim. And it is true that while the Jewish people were in Mitzrayim, the Egyptians limited us from being able to do that. And part of Yetzias Mitzrayim was the Bris Mila that came together with bringing the Korban Pesach. So we'll have to see, what does that mean? They took away from us, at least because we were there in this oppressed framework, we didn't become like the Egyptians. But on the other hand, our sanctity as Bnei Yisrael was also not able to be, positively on display. We hadn't sunk into the negativity to the Shtufei Zima of Mitzrayim. So he says, that's the idea, and the shorthand of the Maral is, Hadavar Yisrael Mehefech Shalai. Something is affected, is changed, when it meets its opposite, when it meets its greatest contrast. And so, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu's putting the Jewish people someplace, where is he putting them? He's putting them in Mitzrayim, which stands in this sharp contrast to the Bnei Yisrael. That's number one. Yes?
How is it that for all those years in Mitzrayim, they were able to be pure and be able to just hold themselves back, yet in the Midbar, we've come to the idea of Zimri and the whole thing there. How is it that they've had 200 years plus Mitzrayim and they were able to keep their tznius, but they've gotten the Torah, they've been all of that, they have all of that, and then they're able to fall like that so easily. I don't understand that.
It's a good question, and it's not just your question. That was the question, that was the reason why it's only there in Parshas Pinchas that Hashem has to affirm the pure pedigree of the Jewish people. You might ask, if it needs this, good housekeeping seal of approval from Hashem, that it should be Haruveni, Hashimaini, well, you know what I'm talking about. It doesn't say Mishpachas, whatever, Chanaich. It says Hachanachi, because that puts a Hey before and a Yud at the end. Yud and Hey together are the name of Hashem, that shows the proper yichus, the proper family that you have here. So why doesn't it say that in Parshas Bamidbar? When it counts the Jews who left Mitzrayim, that would be when that has to be brought up. Because you're saying, maybe in Mitzrayim something happened. Why does it come up 40 years later? And the reason is because of what you just... Your kasha. Your kasha is the Torah's kasha. Or your kasha is the kasha which the Torah had to respond to. When the Jewish people came out of the way from Mitzrayim, so then everybody could live with this nice, so to speak, legend of Jewish purity. But then they had a story, a very ugly story, of the Jewish people going after the daughters of Midian and compromising that purity, and the story of Zimri. So they said, what? Look, you guys are weaklings like the rest of them. So in Mitzrayim also presumably the same thing happened. Says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, no it didn't. So that was the kasha was bothering them. So it remains to be answered. So then how did it happen over there in the case of Zimri? How does it happen there in that particular story? And you have to understand, this was the Eitzah of Bilaam. This was the counsel of Bilaam there at that particular time. This is Bilaam's plan B. You understand that Chazal tell us that Bilaam was the advisor of Paro in Mitzrayim. Right? He was advisor of Paro in Mitzrayim. So what did he say? He said, you got enslaved and you got a... Right? And that's, of course, the study of contrasts. The master and the slave, there's no mixing between the two of them. That's the study of contrasts. That was Bilaam's original suggestion. And in the study of contrasts of Mitzrayim, it didn't work. When Bilaam comes to the Jewish people the second time, what's he doing? He's not coming as a study of contrasts. He's coming as the common. He's coming, remember, he said, you know, people tried to fight him with swords, and they weren't successful. Let me use the tool which is the hallmark of the Jewish people, which is the mouth, the prayer, blessings, curses. Right? I want to pray by their rules. And when he brought them to Midian, to the daughters of Midian, right, and so on and so forth, who are a little closer to the Jewish people. Midian is a descendant of Avram Avinu, right? They're from the Bnei Keturah, from the descendants of Keturah. So there, somehow, he was able to make these inroads. He said, look, you know, the way to really undermine the Jewish people is, again, from the inside, you know, get them where they are. And there, somehow, he was able to do it, coming from a closer, from less of a, from a different kind of a contrast. I'm not explaining it fully, but I hope it's a partial explanation.
You see that today. You see that today, that the enemies of the Jewish people will either try to destroy us outwardly, like they did in Egypt, or through false camaraderie.
Seduce us.
Exactly.
Right.
You see that? I mean, it's...
Right.
So the Egyptians wanted to do this because when they were throwing all of our boys into the sea, the Kavan was to take the women.
That's what the Ramban says. That's the Ramban's exactly right. That's what Ramban says, a simple pshat in the Pasuk. Right? Rashi is bringing there a medrash. They had a vision that there was a leader who was going to be born, so he threw them all in the sea just in case that would be the leader. Ramban says, Pasuk pshat is they're getting rid of the men and they're going to take the women for themselves. In this they were not successful. Yeah?
In regard to the Midian question, doesn't the Medrash say that the Malachim wanted to push Pinchas away? I mean, they thought what Zimri was doing was actually a mitzvah. And I think Moshe Wolfson brings like the same thing you said, the Arizal says by Shlomo about he was trying to marry all the people to bring them to Tachat Yashchina. So Zimri had the same kavanah to do that. So meaning that it wasn't a stupid Zima situation, it was more like it was obviously Pinchas and Zeru Eliyahu knew that it wasn't the time yet for Mashiach, but he was trying to do something great.
That's an angle. It's an angle. It's a midrashic angle to the story. There are many more midrashim that take the story more the way it is said, which is that he was Mekane Labris. He was Mekane Labris. The reason why we have a chair for Eliyahu HaNavi at every Bris Milah is because Pinchas is identified with Eliyahu HaNavi, and here he stood up for the morality of the Jewish people. So we don't make Zimri into just a common criminal or a common, you know, immoral, you know, person lost in immorality. So we, you know, we understand in these midrashim this layer, but on a certain level, it was a failure of morality that didn't happen in Mitzrayim, but yet happened here. So we have to, balance it. A pshat like that doesn't take over the whole story. It adds an angle to the story. Okay, so that's number one. But then the Maral takes it to a second level, what he calls Sisrei Chachma, and he says that the fundamental core of this contrast is the contrast between what Mitzrayim is, which is Chomer, raw matter, and what Yisrael is supposed to be, which is Tzura, which is form. And we talked a little bit about these concepts last week, and we've spoken about them many times. It's a common issue which the Maral discusses regularly. Chomer Tzura, again, as we went over last week, Chomer is the ball of clay, and Tzura is when you shape the ball of clay into a bowl, or into a cup, or into a flower, or into whatever it is that you make it into. The Chomer is the matter, and the Tzura is the form. And basic physicality is called Chomer. And Tzura is taking the physicality and directing it towards something, directing it towards a particular use. Mitzrayim is Ra Chomer. And this is expressed in the idea of what Chazal say, Asher Besar Chomerim Besaram, Vezir Masusim Zir Masam. The Egyptians are compared to the flesh of the Chomer, to the flesh of the donkey. The donkey is, the, as we said, it's the paradigm of Chomer, as we talked about last week. It's, you know, it's not a horse, really, in a sense, where you would look at it and say, well, a donkey, nobody looks at a donkey and says, that's a beautiful donkey, a graceful donkey, right? It's just a schlepper, right? It's there to have something, you know, put upon it and to give it some direction. And that was the, that's the picture of Mitzrayim. He says, Nus, this drive for immorality is mitaivas haguf. It's from the desires of the physical body. In fact, it's considered, in a certain sense, the center point of physical desire, the focal point of physical desire. And so, in that sense, it was the emblem of Mitzrayim. When a Jew practiced immorality, sexual immorality, when the Saita practiced sexual immorality, what did we give her to eat? We gave her to eat. She brought as a korban, rather, excuse me, a korban from sa'irim, from barley. Why? Because barley is machal behema. It was fodder for animals. So he said she did the action of an animal, so therefore her korban is going to be the korban of a behema. And the Mitzrayim is seen that way, whereas Klal Yisrael are supposed to be tzura. And they're supposed to be the form, and the form is nivdal. The form is not mired in physicality. The ultimate tzura, the ultimate form, is above physicality, but then turns and directs the physicality in the proper direction. That's where the contrast between Yisrael is supposed to be with Mitzrayim. And so when Klal Yisrael doesn't have its tzura, when it doesn't have its shleimus, when it can't have its shleimus, and its tzura, tzura is shleimus by definition, you know, by association, so then they're not there yet. So Klal Yisrael had to develop into its 600,000, which is its shleimus in number, and then they could become their tzura and direct themselves properly. However, and the Jewish people were meshubad, were in bondage to a nation like this, that there's no metzius, yoyser poches k'mayhem, there's no more lowly metzius than they, hari reiki lu ein lahem metzius klal. It's like the Jewish people at that point didn't exist. To be mired in Mitzrayim, when the Jewish people are the people of Tzura, that's supposed to give direction to the physical, but instead we are meshubad to the physical, is again the greatest contrast, and therefore the greatest Ger Yezaracha Beretz Lelehem, the greatest Vavodim Ve'inu Osam, the greatest contrast to what the Jewish people would be. So again, on the first level, he just explained it, that there has to be a study in contrast. The Egyptians are this caricature of a nation that's awash in immorality, and the Jewish people are completely absorbed in virtue. That's the contrast. But here he's taken it a step deeper, and he says, because it's really the contrast between Chomer, which is Mitzrayim, and Tzura, which is Yisrael. You there? Okay, we lost them. And Tzura, which is Yisrael. So he brings the morale in this way. Hello?
Switch phone, sorry, but go ahead.
Okay, no problem. So the morale brings the Gemara in Ksubis. The Gemara in Ksubis, famous Gemara, says that there was a story by Rabbi Yechman Zakkai, Sheirechev al Achamar. He was riding on a donkey. Vayesim Yerushalayim, he was leaving Yerushalayim. It's the time of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash. And the students are following after him. Ro'a Riva Achas Sheisim Laketes Sa'irim Yibain Gilolei Behemton Shalarviyim. And they saw a young woman who was trying to pick out the whole kernels of barley that could be picked out, this is very disgusting, from the waste of the animals of the Arvim, of the Arabs. She was starving. The time of the siege of Yerushalayim, right, the siege was effective because it drove the Jewish people literally to starvation. Kivan Sharasa Isai, when she saw Rav Yechanan ben Zakkai, Nisatva Basarava Umda Lefanov, she tried to wrap herself up somewhat, you know, compose herself, and she stood before him, Vamalay, and she said to him, Rebbe Parnaseni. She said, Rebbe, help me, support me, give me something to eat. Amar Lo, he said to her, Bas Miat, who are you? What family do you come from? Amra, she said, Bas Nagdimain Ben Gurion. I'm the daughter of Nagdimain Ben Gurion. Now, for context, Nagdimain Ben Gurion, the Gemara says, in that very time of Rav Yechem and Zakkai, when the siege of Yerushalayim began, there were three wealthy people in Yerushalayim who could have kept Yerushalayim going, sustained Yerushalayim for decades. For years. Well, who were they? Bas Kalba Savua, forget what, and Nagdimain Ben Gurion. He was one of the three wealthiest people in Yerushalayim. Right, so then what happened was, the Bar Yoinim, who wanted to push for a conflict, they burnt down their storehouses. So they didn't have anything. This was the daughter of one of the wealthiest Jewish people around. Amar Loi Sitter Mamen Avicha Echanu. What happened to your father's money? Amar Loi, she said, Rebbe, Loika Adain Masli Masai B'Yerushalayim. She said, isn't this the proverb which they say in Yerushalayim? Melach Mamain Chaser V'Ami Lo Chesed. She said, the salt of money, meaning the preservative for money, is to get rid of it. And some say the preservative of money is to do kindness, which is the same thing. Right? But the way you hold on to your money is by sharing your money. Right? And the Gemara over there says, but one second, your father did do tzedakah. It's known that your father did tzedakah. And she said, he did tzedakah, but he didn't do the kind of tzedakah that he should have done. So it's not like he didn't give anything. He gave. But he wasn't generous, so he should have been generous, and that's what happened. He lost it all. He says, how about your father-in-law's wealth? She, right? Rich people married rich people. Where did his money go? Amalei bazevi beidze. You know, they destroyed each other. Amalei, she said to him, Rebbe, zacharatik shechasamta al ksubasi. She says, do you remember? You were a witness to the ksuba at my wedding. You remember? Amar lehem letalmidim. So he turned to his students. Now she was saying it to him, you remember. And the students didn't know what they were talking about. He turns to his students and he says, Zohar anikshe chasamti al ksubasa. I remember, I was an aide at that ksuba. You didn't forget signing on this particular ksuba. Okay? Now, nowadays, we do things with a standard amount. Right? The ksuba uses standard figures for everybody. But in those days, They didn't use standard amounts. And her ksuba heisa kaisi kairi elef alafim din rezav mi base avia, 1,000,000 gold pieces from her father's house that she brought in, chutz mishel chamel. And that's besides from what the husband promised on his own. Right? A ksuba is a commitment both to what she brings into the marriage and what the husband promises her. Right? And this was 1,000,000 gold pieces that she brought in, besides for what her husband, who himself was a wealthy man, committed to. So this is the wealth. This was the greatness. And zoom, right, to the subterranean basement. So what did Rabbi Yechim and Zakkai say? Ashrechem Yisrael. The Jewish people, you are so fortunate. But Azman Sha'atem Maisim Mitzayna Shal Mokayim In kol umah v'loshin sheletes b'chem, when you do God's will, no nation can touch you. U'ksheein atem asim ritzayin shel makayim, when you don't do Hashem's will, ma'aser eschem yad umah shveila, Hashem will deliver you and delivers you into the hands of the lowest nations, and not only the lowest nations, but the animals of the lowest nations. Here she was; she was picking out from the manure of the waste of the animals. What's going on? Right, so that's the Gemara. So says the Maral, what is this? What's this Shevach Vaido? What's this praise that Rabbi Yochanan is saying? That wow, when you do the will of Hashem, no nation can touch you. But when you don't do the will of Hashem, He puts you in the hands of a Umah Shveila. What's the praise of the Jewish people? So he says, Mipnei Shemalas Yisrael Mala Nivdelas. Because the Jewish people are supposed to be somehow above physicality, directing it. And there's no lack in such a madrega, right? When it's nivdal, there's only chisaron in something which is material and physical. But when ein Yisrael eisen mitzayim shomokam inim shulchem hachisaron harayagia bitul ahem legamrei. He says, it's such a contrast to what the Jewish people are supposed to be that they pasha don't exist when they don't have it. You understand? If Klal Yisrael is defined by this metaphysical greatness, so when they fall, it's not that they're Klal Yisrael but they're not so great. It's that they lose their entire grounding. We lose our entire being. That's the idea. Says the others, that's not their definition, and therefore they won't fall so far. And the Maral brings this, he brings what the Gemara says, what Rashi brings in Chumash, that when Hashem spoke to Adam Arishon, He said to him, here I am, I'm creating you. When He created man, He said, He's creating him in the image of God, the Yirdu, and He will rule over the Gas Hayam and Eif HaShemayim, over the fish, over the birds, over the animals, over all of the earth. The Yirdu is not the usual term you would choose for ruling. What term would you use? The Yimshalu. Something like that. But the Yirdu is used. And the Yirdu, right, the root of the Yirdu is Yorad, to fall. Right now, a rode is to rule. Why? Because when I rule over somebody, they, so to speak, fall before me. Right? But the yirdu could be the yirdu, using a term which is a double entendre, for positive, for negative. Say Chazal, if the man merits and fulfills his potential, he controls all the animals. He's above them all. But if he fails to fulfill his potential, he's lower than the animals. Why should he be lower than the animals? And we know that it was true, right? Because when Cain killed Hevel, what was his worry? His worry was that yesterday, as he said to the Rabbeinu Shel Olam, the animals wouldn't touch me, but now they'll kill me. Why does he become lower than an animal? Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a man, He gave him an animal body, and He blew into him a soul. So if he doesn't have the soul, or if he doesn't maximize the use of the soul, then he's an animal. Why does he become lower than the animals? But the idea is that when Hashem put in the soul, it wasn't icing on the cake. It wasn't like a little something extra. You know, here's a nice thing. You want it, use it. If you don't want it, then you don't want it. It became part of who we had to be. And therefore the definition of a human being to be who he is, to be a human being, has to be with an actualization of the Tzelem Elokim, of the divine image. If he fails to do that, he fails to be. He loses his claim to existence. He's not then just equal to those who are below him on the totem pole. He's less. It's not a luxury to be a Tzelem Elokim. For the one in whom the divine image is endowed, it becomes essential. And without it, he's lost. So you say, is that a good thing or is that a bad thing? Well, of course, it hurts more when he doesn't do his job. It hurts more when he doesn't do his job. Then he descends below the animals. Maybe, you know, as sort of like the sort of fail-safe method, we should say, you know, let's just take the Tzelem Elokim as an upgrade, you know, like power windows. You know, like we'll just take it as something extra. And that way, you know, we'll always be sure we'll at least be like the Behemoth. We'll take the Yisrael, we'll take being Jews, it's like, oh, we'll be in the nations, plus we'll have a little extra for the Jews. If we don't do it, then we'll be like everybody else. Yes, for when we fail, that would be a better result. Quote unquote. But when it's just an extra, then it's not us. Then we're a behemoth with a cherry on top. Hashem didn't want us to be a behemoth with a cherry on top. He wanted us to be something fundamentally different. He wanted us to be tzura. He wanted us to be direction, purpose, driven completely by things that were not from the realm of the physical. And therefore, when we fail to be that, we fail to be anything. That's the idea that Rav Yechim and Zakei said, Ashreichem Yisrael. It's you. It's not a little extra. If it was a little extra, so then, look, when we fail, so then we'd get driven out of Yerushalayim by the Romans, the Beis Hamikdash would be destroyed, and we'd go and we'd set up shop in Spain, you know, nice and happy and everything else. But we didn't do that without first picking and having our greatest picking barley kernels from the dung of animals, which is absolute bittle, which is, yeah, it's, I mean, I'm forcing myself to repeat it. Because we didn't compromise our cherry on top, we compromised our very essence. Kol Yisrael is Tzura, Mitzrayim is Chaimer. And that's why, says the Maral, on the deeper level, the Shibud of Yisrael in Mitzrayim is that failure. Is that when the Yisrael isn't Yisrael, so then they're under this nation which is Chuloi Chaymer. That's what that's why he says it. He fills it out a little bit with other pieces. Continues the Maral. Okay, I'm sorry, questions or comments?
Why do we need that? Why do we have to fall before him to reach our potential? Why is that a necessary thing?
Mir Tashem. Okay. We'll learn more yet, again, piece by piece. But this is a kiyum. First, what he's saying in this parak is that this is a kiyum of Avod Ugeriyas Aracha Beretz Olahem Avon Avinu Aysam. This is why this is the consummate golus for the Jewish people, because it stands in the Egyptian stands in the greatest contrast to the Jewish people. And the Jewish people without Tzura are below anything. Without Tzura are below anything because that's our essence. Why we had to go through it? Why did Hashem say to Avram that the Jewish people have to go through this before, you know, they can have the real bris fulfilled, so we still have more to learn.
Weren't we below the animals in Egypt or not? I mean, we had them around.
We were below the Egyptians and the Egyptians were animals.
In Egypt, we were.
We were below the
morality,
Egyptians.
Even though we maintained a morality.
Yeah. In other words, of course, yes, we did retain to a certain degree that character, and that's part of what he points out as the contrast, but in a certain sense, of course, we were slaves to Mitzrayim. We were slaves to the lowest in that sense of people. So both are there. Canaan.
We're slaves too.
So Canaan are also slaves. We're also told that they are supposed to be Tzura Pchusa. But what Maral teaches here is that the difference between Canaan and Mitzrayim is that Mitzrayim is Chaymer, and Canaan is Tzura Mutbas B'Chaymer. What does that mean? Canaan is, Mitzrayim is just physicality. That's the Madrega of Mitzrayim. That's the Madrega of Mitzrayim. B'sar chamayim b'sarim azir masusim zir masam. But the Canaanim are already something of a tzura, something of a shape and form of their own. But it's a shape and form that's mired in material, in physicality. What does that mean? You know, people can use physicality and direct it. It shouldn't be such raw physicality. But it's not necessarily directed towards a higher, greater purpose. There's a tzura techeimer. If I take the raw physical matter of the clay and I shape it into a teacup, I've given it tzura. Right? But, again, at the risk of sounding corny, but you'll understand, if I shape it into a kiddush cup, then I've done something else. When I shape the physicality into something, when I shape the physicality into something that has a form, but that form is still with a ceiling, that it's just a form and a direction within the physical world, maza. Right? But when it's a tzura that's above it, where the person's taking the physicality to use it something which is way beyond the physicality, that's a different kind of a tzura. And the contrast between Yisrael and Canaan is the contrast between a tzura hanivdeles min achaymer, a tzura which is transcending physicality, and a tzura hamudvas b'chaymer, and a tzura which is mired in physicality.
The concepts of Canaan and Mitzrayim, are they people or land or both or more things?
Hmm?
Or more. Is Mitzrayim like a place physically?
It's everything. It's on every level. It's a place. It's a people. It's an idea.
Instance,
this is the place and the people are where the idea is concentrated, where it's found in the deepest sense.
Because some aspects of Canaan are still there after the Canaan leaves, right? The land is permanently has that effect. And Mitzrayim, even if Paro shot that he was a foreign king, took over, you know, because Winston didn't know. Yosef, maybe that was something came and usurped it, but it's still Paul Triumph was the place, not necessarily that he was even a mentor.
I'm not sure what you mean. I mean, with Canaan, you know, Eretz Canaan is Eretz Yisrael. And the Canaanim were, again, you have to look at it over there, but to some degree, the Canaanim were foreign to, it was, you know, Ba'esahi, the Canaanim were living there at that point in time. But it's not posha, it's not simple whose chelik it really was. You know, Eretz Canaan per se is not negative. Eretz Yisrael has an intolerance for negative things. Mitzrayim is structurally different. So it's not just incidental that the Mitzrayim were there. It would always be Eretz Mitzrayim. The Jews would never take it. Right? We discuss, HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't say, why don't you just stay in Eretz Mitzrayim? You know, that's the way the question is formulated by some. Conquer the Egyptians, redeem them from the Egyptians, and take over Eretz Mitzrayim. Hashem didn't want them to stay in Eretz Mitzrayim. Hashem wanted them to be in Eretz Canaan. Okay, so Mitzrayim, it's more inherent than in Canaan, if the connection to the land is less inherently flawed.
I'm going to hang up now. Thank you, Rob.
Okay, be well. Have a good day.
Take care.
So he says that you know, that's going to be the contrast. Now, this is why, concludes the Maral, we could live in Mitzrayim for all those years. We lived in Mitzrayim with Mitzrayim because there's a relationship between Tzura and Chomer. Tzura has to have a relationship to Chomer. You can't have form without matter. You can't have structure without matter. But with Canaan, they were providing their own structure for the matter. So in Mitzrayim, we lived there for a long time. And we say, don't disdain the Egyptians entirely, because after all, you live there. Because Chomer has to have a relationship to Tzura. It's true that when we were slaves in Mitzrayim, the relationship was cockeyed. Right? The Chomer was prevailing over, the Tzura of the Jewish people was not complete, and the Chomer was therefore prevailing over them. But ultimately, Chomer has to be wedded to Tzura. Tzura has to be wedded to Chomer. But with Canaan, and Tzura is what's supposed to win, but with Canaan, the Tzura HaPechusa HaArura, with Canaan there was a Tzura, but it was a lesser Tzura. And so by Canaan, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Leisachayu Kol Neshama. Right? We had to purge Canaan of its inhabitants in order to take it over. Right? HaKadosh Baruch Hu was much more worried about it, that they're going to draw you after them, because they have a vision, but it's an alternative vision. And it was therefore much more complex. Now, I want to tell you that in understanding the reality of this, it's not pashut, it's not simple. If you recall last week when we learned Paragimel, the Maral explained that the inu isam, the affliction, was the conflict between Tzuras Yisrael and Tzuras Mitzrayim, the competition between the two of them, the power of the Egyptians. Power of the Egyptians isn't simply the matter of the Egyptians. Of course there's such a thing as Tzuras Mitzrayim. But evidently it's so driven by Chomer, whereas Tzuras Canaan is a little bit, you know, like sort of like a notch above that. At a certain point I can't explain the subtleties of the difference between those two things. But as he's pointing out, they're both mired in physicality. But Mitzrayim is more of a chaymer, more of a base chaymer, that somehow there would have to be some level of compatibility of tzura to chaymer, whereas Canaan is already more of a conflict, because it's something which a greater form, with a greater direction, with a greater structure. So to summarize what we've learned about here today, here in this Perek Dalet of the Gvuras, the experience of Klal Yisrael Mitzrayim, and the Kur HaBarzel, and the crucible of Mitzrayim, is indeed an experience of contrast. Mitzrayim is mired in physicality and immorality, and the Jewish people are, in contrast, paragons of virtue in this sense, even as they went through everything that we went through there in Mitzrayim. That's on the first level. And on the second level, Mitzrayim is so completely chaymer, so completely physicality, and Yisrael is defined by its tzura. Defined by its surah. If Yisrael descends to just be Chaimer, we're below Chaimer, we're less than that. Klal Yisrael fell below Mitzrayim because when we weren't surah, when we weren't all that we could be, we weren't anything. We weren't anything. And Mitzrayim is much lower than us, but that's all that they're expected to be in a certain sense. That's how the contrast strikes. So it's going to have to emerge from Mitzrayim as a Jewish people with its contrast to Mitzrayim on display of its virtue, and a Jewish people that's ready to assume tzura, that's ready to assume a purpose, a direction that's way above simply the physical. It'll use the physical, but it's not guided by the physical. It's there simply to guide it, to direct it. Mirtz Hashem will continue. We'll proceed.
My poor note-taking skills.